protect Americans from those costs is ongoing. But it's also worth thinking about the fact that the subsidies are set to expire at all, meaning they've always been temporary. So how did a government subsidy that was supposed to be finite become something millions of Americans cannot live without? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's a trip down and all around the South with brilliant food scholar Michael Twitty and a new documentary about one of my favorite chefs and food writers of all time, Miss Edna Lewis. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, literary lion Salman Rushdie, the internationally renowned author of over 15 novels, is out with a new short story collection. He'll talk about that and the impacts of a 2022 assassination attempt on his life, with Pulomi Saha, a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg. This summer, while driving a house guest around Lake Wallenpaupack, because, you know, we're lake people now, I happened upon Lackawack Sanctuary. I knew nothing about this place, but came to find out that it's considered a true treasure of northeastern Pennsylvania. It was originally built in 1903 by a congressman named William Connell as a summer camp for his family. It changed hands throughout the years, and in the mid-20th century, it was owned by the Watrous family, who had set out to protect one of our last pristine glacial lakes, Lake Lackawack. And in 1966, they formally donated land and several buildings, which eventually became Lackawack Sanctuary, a public nature preserve and scientific research site. My guest today is the president and CEO of Lackawack Sanctuary, Craig Lukacs. In the first half of the show, we're going to find out a bit about Craig and how he came to Lackawack Sanctuary. In the second half of the show, we'll dive a little deeper into Lackawack's expanding role in science and education and what we can look forward to at this remarkable sanctuary. Welcome to Catskill Character, Craig. It's really wonderful to have you here.
It's great to be here. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
When we spoke earlier, you told me that you're from Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which is in Lucerne County. What was it like growing up there?
It's a lot different today than it was back 40 plus years ago, but it was a great little community. It was a coal mining town and a lot of industry there. So a lot of factories, and I think that's what the claim to fame was. It was the crossroads between Interstate 81 and 80. I lived very close. My grandma lived very close to our church, and she would always say, when you hear the bells ring at 6 o'clock, come home. You know, so we were outside all day. So I was an outdoors person growing up as a kid. And you know, that was the big part of my life, was just having adventures throughout the summer.
So even though it was an industrial town, there were places for you to go outdoors.
Yeah. So the local parks, we would ride our bikes everywhere. I mean, it was a different time then. You know, you can safely go ride your bike, you know, go to grab a quick snack somewhere at, you know, a little like five and dime store, and then come home, play baseball, you know, on a open lot somewhere. That was what we used to do.
So after you graduated from high school, you went to the University of Scranton, and then you went to Catholic University in DC for a master's, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Which makes total sense to me, because you originally wanted to become a priest.
So I studied philosophy and theology at the University of Scranton, and then went to get my master's in theology at Catholic University, which was a great experience. I enjoyed it there.
What made you want to become a priest?
I think it was the fact that I've always wanted to give back to the world, to society, to make a difference. My grandmother always would say that we really didn't have a choice. She would say, you know, you should either be a barber, which was what my grandfather did, a doctor, or a priest. Obviously, I had more choices than that, but I always felt called to be a priest because I grew up next to the church. Seeing that presence of the priest doing things for the community and helping people, I think it was a desire to really connect with the world and to make a difference.
You sound like you were very close to your grandmother.
Yeah, both my grandmother and my grandfather, they helped raise us. My mom was a single mom, and they were pretty much where we went after school when my mom was working. So they were a very big part of our lives.
That is so important to have that generational impact.
I even lived with my grandparents when I came back from DC. I helped take care of them. They were older in age. So that was kind of an experience living there with them. It kind of gave back to them a little bit for what they've helped me do in my early childhood.
Oh, that's great, Craig. We know what made you want to become a priest, but I was wondering, was there a defining moment when you realized that maybe you were better suited to do something else?
Yes, it was literally right before the holidays of my last year there. I was like, I just don't know if I want to really commit to a world where I am caring for so many. The transition of the church at the time was so different, where you had multiple parishes, and I think what the factor was coming home alone. You know, I would be done with everything on a Sunday, and I would come back to that rectory and what was there for me? I didn't have a family. I didn't have, children. It was just that idea of all this work you had to do and then no support system. So I was like, do I really want that? Do I really want something where I can make a difference, but do it where I can have something that I was looking for, which was companionship and a family and all that kind of stuff.
You know how when you're in a plane and the oxygen masks are going to drop down if we have any problems, make sure you put it on yourself first before you go to put it on a child or someone else. Because if you're not happy and you're not well, you can't really help anyone else. So it sounds like you made a really good decision.
I don't regret my decisions. A lot of people said, well, you wasted all those years in school, but
No.
I feel that they were like formative years. They were getting me to the point where I needed to be. I feel like everything in the past helps you and prepares you for where you are currently.
Exactly. And education is never a waste.
No, for sure
So,
not.
well, we got that straightened out. Okay, so before you came to Lackawack, you had lots of other jobs. What were those jobs, and how did they help to prepare you for this one?
Oh, wow. So after I left the seminary, I worked for Catholic Social Services for Catholic Charities in adoption work, doing family studies and home
Oh.
studies, which was a great job. But I slowly started getting into fundraising while I was there. So we had to do fundraising to help with the foster and adoptive processes. And that kind of led me into raising money for nonprofits. And that led me to my next job, which was basically a brief stay at the University of Scranton, my alma mater. I raised money for the development office. And while I was there, I had somebody reach out to me who was looking to hire a development director for a long-standing preschool. It worked with kids with disabilities, but they were buying a building of their own and they needed somebody to raise the money and get all that process rolling. So interviewed, got the job and did really well. And it was successful. We raised the money we needed to. It was at that time in like back in 2008 when the economy was not so good and the markets were bad and stuff. So we still raised our money. We still did what we needed to do. The school's flourishing right now. I love to see where they're going and what they're doing now. But then that led me to oversee. I went into more of a management, more of CEO work. I got a job with the YMCA, which is in Pittston. And it was interesting with that job. My last day on the job of the school I was working at, both organizations are by the Susquehanna River in the Wyoming Valley. And we were having a flood. And we were moving all the stuff out of the school's basement to go up, or the first level up, so that wouldn't get damaged if the levees broke. And then my
Ooh.
first day on the job at the YMCA was to close the Y because of potential flooding too. So it was a very interesting time, but that was a very memorable time too. But
Wow.
anyway, long story short, I ended up being at the Y for a couple of years, doing a lot of work there, a lot of renovations and building programs up, and then took a bit of a break with the Y. That's a burnout zone sometimes. You have to learn lessons about what's appropriate in terms of mental health. Ys are open right early morning to late night for people to work out, to programming, that kind of stuff, 7 days a week. And I just burnt myself out trying to do too much. And so I took some time, couple months off. Then by the time Christmas came around, I was ready to start looking for my next adventure and started looking at places, was interviewing in New York City, Philadelphia. I was thinking bigger cities, looking at other Ys. And then I came across this ad for Lackawack Sanctuary. Came up and I'm like, okay, it's an hour, 15-minute drive from my house, and basically loved what I saw when I got here. And I realized I could definitely make an impact with the organization. It needed some work at the time, and here I am. years later.
That is an amazing journey because you can see how each of those jobs is part of the pie of what of the work that you do now. Like if you divide your work into a pie, you know, slices of a pie, you can see definitely that you're like the perfect candidate for that job. So you've been there since 2014. That's 11 years. What surprised you about the sanctuary and or the job of bringing Lackawack Sanctuary forward?
I think it was a lot of fundraising had to be done, and a lot of restructuring. And I think what was interesting was more so in marketing wise. You know, a lot of people didn't know what LACWAC was, and I think it was my push from the very get-go to make sure that we got more people here to our property, whether it was school groups for field trips. So we developed programming, K-12 programming, field trips, hired educators. You know, of course, COVID really helped us a lot because everybody needed to get outside. So our parking lots
Oh,
were filled in
yeah.
COVID. But before that happened, you know, we definitely had to do our work. You know, I know we mentioned this before, but it's obviously, you know, part of LACWAC is that we get a lot of out-of-town visitors, and we love that. But we also need to do a good job with the locals as well. So the goal is just to get people out here, reconnect with nature. And that was my big priority. It's still my priority, right? What can we do to reconnect people to nature, to learn about the world around them, and how we can live peacefully with the world and also care for the world?
Yeah. Well, speaking of reconnecting with nature, you talked about how you lived an hour, I think you said an hour and 15 minutes away, but you cleared that problem by, I guess, negotiating your contract and you actually live on the sanctuary, which I think it's fantastic. Tell us about the building that you live in and what it's like living in a nature preserve.
I'm one of the first buildings on the property right before the main gates. And it's a chalet style home built in the 70s, which I love. It has a little loft where the bedroom's at. And it's a very cute place. You know, the downside about it in the winter is not always the best, right? It can be cold and stuff, but have a fireplace, which is great. But the idea of living in the middle of the woods, the middle of a sanctuary where you can hear everything at night is amazing. You step outside, you can see all the stars, you know, there's no pollution, light pollution. So that's definitely something that I don't take for granted. I mean, obviously, there's some things that I don't like about it is that I have to drive everywhere to go for even the smallest things, which is errands, groceries, grab a cup of coffee in the morning. So, but you adapt to that. You adapt to learn how to make your own coffee in the morning and don't rely on Starbucks or Dunkin' or anything else, you know. But yeah, it was a change coming up here about three and a half, 4 years ago. But now I would never change that.
Yeah, well, that's great. This is a big job that you have. And I was wondering, is there a place on the Lackawack Sanctuary where you go to kind of recharge and regroup?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's a lot of places I love to visit on the sanctuary property, but I think my favorite spot is, and I know it's kind of weird because sometimes it's busier than not, but is to hike all the way down to the shoreline of Lake Wampanoag and just to sit there. Sometimes you can hear the boats or see the boats going up and down the lake. Other times you just see the water crashing on the rocky shoreline and just, you know, thinking, you know, I mean, obviously the lake wasn't there all the time, but it's about 100 years old. But it's just that peaceful connection because you have about a 1.5 mile hike down there to the shoreline and just sit there. And I think also the second option would just to be anywhere in the forest at LACWAC, you know, just stepping outside, walking 10 minutes into the forest, you kind of lose yourself and regain connection to nature, really.
That's fantastic. We all need to be able to regroup and recharge. So right now we're going to take a break. This is Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, with today's guest, the president and CEO of the Lackawack Sanctuary in Lake Ariel, Pennsylvania, Craig Lukacs. We'll be right back after a short break.
On This Old House Radio Hour, give any room in your home a new floor in hours without losing your security deposit.
With a thought in mind, like, I can change this, I can change that. Not just for renters, but for homeowners who are in between renovations, they can try them out in a peel and stick method.
Plus, Pulitzer Prize winning writer Jeffrey Eugenides shows us the house that inspired his novel, Middlesex. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
The need is growing. More families in our community are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are on the front lines, but they need help. You can make a difference by donating non-perishable food, personal care items, and baby supplies, or by volunteering to support and distribute these donations. It's about nourishing our neighbors. Visit WJFFradio.org for info to help ensure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
Welcome back to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm here today with Craig Lukacs, President and CEO of Lackawack Sanctuary in Lake Ariel, Pennsylvania. In the first half of the show, Craig shared a bit about himself and his journey to the Lackawack Sanctuary. In the second half of the show, we're going to touch upon the history, the mission of Lackawack, along with the growth that's taken place and the vision for Lackawack moving into the future. Here we go. Craig, there is such a long history here, dating all the way back to William Penn in 1754. When you look back at the history of Lackawack, is there something that stands out for you?
You know, we can even trace the history back even further than the Penn family to the Lenape Native Americans who lived on the area. And that's one thing that's important to me. It's like we found years ago, I wasn't here to see this, but a canoe that was buried in our lake. And we do know for a fact that there is one still there that we never brought up. Unfortunately, the first one disintegrated when it was brought up. That's always a unique thing that people forget about. You know, that history is there. You know, we can see remnants of the first people before really the settlers came, you know, before the Penn family came over. And then we can trace the history from all that, you know, from those individuals up to when the facilities were built here at Lackawack.
Well, I know that maintaining the rare, pristine water of Lake Wackawack has clearly been an objective for a very long time. Tell us why it's so important. Why is this glacial lake so important?
So the glacial lake's important, one, because back in 1903, when the property was developed by the Connell family of Scranton, they realized that that lake was also their drinking water for the house that they built, which was a summer estate, the hunting cabin. So they put all of the septic outside of that watershed of that lake. Over time, the Colonel Watrous, who was also from Scranton, he ended up buying the property, very invested in hydroelectric, was involved with the impetus of forming of Lake Wampanoag. But when he bought the property, he kept this property for himself, for his family and friends. Eventually, his daughter-in-law and his grandson ended up living at the property. And while they were here, they started reading up on conservation and how to protect the environment. And it started leading them to conversations with people throughout New York and Pennsylvania, eventually to conversations with people at the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, which is part of Drexel now. And after talking to some researchers there, they realized that this lake is a very valuable lake because we've controlled the entire watershed over pretty much the course of the history, tracing back to the William Penn family, and nothing has ever polluted this lake. So this is a baseline research lake for lakes across the world. Plus the fact that it's this glacial lake, which means there is nothing that feeds into it, meaning a stream or a spring. I guess really in a sense, it stays filled because of the watershed around it. So whatever trickles into it from that watershed is what keeps the lake at its level. This researcher, Ruth Patrick, came up and realized that this lake is the most pristine lake, the most pristine southern glacial lake in the northern hemisphere. So the most pristine southern glacial lake. So it's the most south, but the most pristine in the northern hemisphere of glacial lakes. So it has a very rare quality compared to other glacial lakes. I mean, there's a lot of glacial lakes, definitely in New York State and in New England, because you think where the glaciers were back in the time of the ice age, when they melted and receded, that's what was left. These pockets of lakes where they melted and the water was trapped. And that's how you form a glacial lake. And here we have one here at Lackawack.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, right?
It is, yes.
So Lackawack really has two identities. It's a public nature preserve, and at the same time, it's a scientific research station. How do you, as the guy in charge, balance these two identities?
It is interesting because Lackawack is a nonprofit. Our mission is three words, right? It's research, education, preservation. But there's so much that goes into that. You know, the science side of Lackawack, which is the research to education, which involves all ages of learning, and then conservation or preservation. I mean, how do you define preservation? Is it historic preservation? Is it conservation of the land? So we have to merge all this into one to form our identity. And so it's been a challenge over the years. A lot of times the boards in the past have favored one over the other. But realistically, we see this here now at Lackawack as those three words really integrating together nicely with Lackawack. Because if we didn't have the research, we wouldn't be able to teach people about the environment and what goes on in the world around them.
You have a research lab right there on the property, correct?
We do. So in the 60s, when they first developed the sanctuary, it was like these crew labs, like a trailer lab. Then they were in the carriage house. And then back when I first started here, we built a lab based on funding from the National Science Foundation. And so now it's a big lab in the sense that a lot of equipment there that we can do water testing, all that kind of stuff.
Would you say that the research happening at Lackawack now contributes to the larger conversations about climate, water quality, and conservation?
100%. 100%. We've been monitoring Lake Lackawack since the 60s and long-term data from the 90s, which means like there are instruments in the lake that are monitoring it every 15 minutes. And we have found from all this data compiled over 40 some years that there's things happening in this lake, meaning the surface temperature for one is changing. And then the changing of the surface temperature is allowing us to, how do you say it? Like, did we do it on our own? Did we do anything to make the surface temperature happen to increase? No, we control the watershed. We don't put any boats, no septic, nothing of that goes into it. So it has to be atmospheric happening. And so we compared our lake with lakes across the world, and we realized that our lake is a base lake to look at how all these other lakes around the world have changed, are changing. And so the United Nations had a report a couple years ago about this whole concept of atmospheric changes happening across the world that are increasing things like what we call now as climate change, right? Why is the water of Lake Lackawack changing and getting warmer when we're doing nothing to it? So what's causing that? So it has to be something happening in the atmosphere. And that's the claim to fame, because people don't realize how global Lake Lackawack is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell us about the new environmental education center.
Oh, yeah. So we were privileged to open a new education center around May of last year. And it was great because we had this dream of doing it for since 2007. And long story short, we took our former owner's house, converted it into the center, and then built off the back of it as well. And now we were able to host field trips, education programs, retreats there.
And this isn't available just for kids in Pennsylvania. You open it up to everyone.
Correct. Yeah. So it's open to anyone who wants to make the trip here. We do have some lodging here for groups that want to stay on property with us. We've had other school groups from outside of state come over. So we're really getting to that point. And I that's something that we're also planning for the future too with Lackawack, is how can we become a more viable resource for people who want to travel to us as well.
Yeah. Well, you just talked about the temperature change of the water. Are there other environmental or ecological challenges you're facing at the sanctuary? And if so, how are you preparing for them?
Oh, some of the big changes that we're having too is our forest is bad. Our forest is really basically has been damaged by deer. And so when you go out and hike the Lackawack, everyone's like, oh, this is so pretty. You know, there's the ferns growing. And then, but there's no other plant life that are growing up below. There's no bushes and shrubs. Nothing can be sustained there or to grow because the deer browse is so heavy here. And so that's one of the big things that we're trying to work with. And then, of course, around now, there are so many different issues with tree species, whether it's the woolly adelgid with the hemlock, or the ash trees are being destroyed by bugs and different insects. So that's always a challenge for us to keep our forest healthy too. So while we do our claim to fame as water quality, our water quality wouldn't be good if we didn't have a healthy forest.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So what do you see as the biggest priority for the sanctuary over the next decade? I mean, you got so many things going on.
Yeah, we've taken on some new sanctuaries too. So we have a total 4 sanctuaries now, besides our proper Lackawack sanctuary itself, which is 550 acres. We have a bunch of other sanctuaries that range from like 35 acres up to 80 acres each. And so one of those is to upgrade those, keep those up and running, making more access to the public for those, but also to build some infrastructure here that fits within the landscape of Lackawack to have more people stay with us, to kind of engage with us about conservation, environmental education. So we're looking to build some more cabins for people to stay here around our visitor center, where we can bring in larger groups of people, whether it's a retreat, a conference. We would love to host. We're part of the world organization, the United States Organization of Field Stations. It's called OBFS, and we would love to host one of their conferences some year. That's one of our goals. And so we need to find more housing at Lackawack. So our goal is to build a little bit more housing. And people always say, well, how do you build housing when you're a nature center and protect the environment? Well, you kind of look at areas where trees are down and try to fit the structures within the forest area itself. So we're trying to be mindful of all of that going forward into the future.
That's great. I wish we had more time because I'd love to talk to you about the deer. There's a constant problem around here. How do you mitigate that issue? But we unfortunately don't have the time to talk about that. But if a person feels moved to do it, how can one best support the work that's being done at Lackawack Sanctuary?
So people can become a member of Lackawack. Membership has some benefits to it, which is introduction to some pre-programming, but it's also a good cause. It supports us 100% tax deductible. People can just make an outright donation to Lackawack and our programs, but people also can make a donation where they can restrict it to some specific aspect of Lackawack, whether it's the scientific research or kids programming or K-12 programming and that kind of stuff. So all of the money that we receive in terms of donations goes back to what we do as a nonprofit.
Well, I am so glad, I have to tell you, that my friend and I just happened upon Lackawack Sanctuary on that fateful day. So I just want to tell the listener, for more information about the programs and events and ways to get involved, the website is lackawack.org. Very easy, very simple. And Craig, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Catskill Character and sharing the story and the vision behind Lackawack. It's been fantastic having you on.
No, thank you so much. It was great talking with you, and I'd love to talk further with you in the future if you like, but thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30 on Radio Catskill, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Please join us for more fascinating stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Sullivan County's social host law, Jared's Law, makes it illegal for anyone 18 or older to provide alcohol or cannabis to minors. Named for a local teen killed in a drunk driving accident, Jared's Law ensures that adults are held accountable, with penalties including fines and even jail time. Parents and guardians are still the number one deterrent to underage substance use, and Jared's Law helps keep our kids safe. Paid for by Catholic Charities.
This week on CatsCast, a shop in Catskill that sells vintage Catskills.
You told me 4 years ago I'd have a retail shop on Main Street. I'm like, you're crazy. because it's not something that was ever on my radar.
Plus, a community-based all-volunteer organization helping seniors who wish to remain safe and comfortable in their own homes.
They're just very good people.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
Recently on Wait Wait, Zach Zimmerman marveled at the discovery of the largest spider web ever found.
Did it say some, really, really, that is some pig.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us to hear our commentary on the interesting creatures in the week's news, plus Andy Richter dishing about his recent run on Dancing with the Stars. That's Wait Wait from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.